The following presentation of the Midland City Planning Commission will begin in a moment. The Midland City Planning Commission is responsible for overseeing the city's master plan, conducting public hearings, and offering recommendations to the City Council on a wide range of local land use issues. The Planning Commission consists of 9 Midland residents who are appointed by the City Council. Planning Commission meets 2 Tuesdays per month at 7 p.m. in Council Chambers at City Hall. This presentation is provided by the MCTV Network, a service of the City of Midland. Replays of this meeting can be found on MGTV Channel 188 on Charter Spectrum, through Channel 99 on AT&T Uverse, or on demand at www.cityofmidlandmi.gov. Select meetings are available on MCTV Network's Government Affairs Podcast Channel.
Good evening and welcome to this regular meeting of the Midland City Planning Commission taking place on Tuesday, June 27th. This meeting is called to order. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Please call roll.
Craig. Decker.
Here.
Bain.
Here.
Panasik. McCoy.
Here.
Broderick.
Here.
Kohlinger.
Here.
Mr. Chair, you have a quorum.
All right. Next item on our agenda is approval of the minutes from our last regular meeting on June 13th. Any comments or revisions? Looking for a motion.
A motion. We approve the minutes from the last scheduled meeting.
I second.
A motion from Commissioner Broderick and a second from Commissioner Decker to approve the minutes from the regular meeting on June 13th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Meeting minutes are approved. Next item on our agenda is public hearings. We only have one this evening. As we get started, just a quick reminder about our process. So we'll begin with the staff presentation and overview of the petition. We'll prevent the petitioner and the opportunity to present, then welcome public comments, and then give the petitioner the opportunity to come up for final comments before closing the public hearing. So on our agenda today, we have site plan number 423 as our one and only public hearing.
All right, site plan number 423 is for a Nash Dermatology addition located at 2711 West Wackerly Street. The applicant is R.E. Kennedy Construction on behalf of Nash Dermatology. And the zoning for the property is OS Office Service. And again, the proposal is for a 1,870 square foot medical office expansion. So taking a look at the site, just south of West Wackerly Street, and then south of 10 there, just north of Shade West Drive, condominiums here. Some more medical offices to the east, and then another medical office building to the west. This is a closer view. The site was approved for this Nash Dermatology in 2019, so that's probably why we're seeing a lot of different soil here with this 2020 aerial imagery. This is a little closer look at the residential units to the south. Taking a look at the zoning, like I said, the subject property is OS Office Service. Medical offices are permitted use within this district. A little bit of neighborhood commercial to the north, some office service to the northwest, and then some RA4 single and two family residential to the south, with some RA1 single family residential to the south of that. So this is the proposed addition. Take a little bit closer view. So the 1,870 square feet comprises mostly of this portion of the building here, and a little bit over on this kind of southwest corner here. The landscaping along the existing, you know, kind of south face of the building is proposed to be transplanted, and then a catch basin is proposed to be relocated. Everything else with the site is staying the same. The parking for the site is adequately sized for the addition. The pedestrian access is adequate, as it was approved in 2019. The existing site, Nash Dermatology. And then, so again, just this relocated catch basin and then this additional 1,800 square feet expansion. So the reason the Planning Commission is seeing the this site plan and is reviewing it is because of the residentially zoned property to the south. So typically, we would own, Planning Commission would review and see expansion projects of 15,000 square feet or more. But because this expansion is located directly adjacent to that RA4 zoning, that's why we're reviewing it tonight. Okay. So these are some of the renderings of the building. So this would be like the front entrance. And then this is part of the expansion here. And again here, very similar height. And here's another view down here and kind of just overall. I can even zoom in a little bit. All right, so as I mentioned, the site plan is required as the proposed addition is greater than 1,000 square feet and directly adjacent to that RA4 residential zoning. And then some items commonly addressed with construction permitting would be that stormwater management permit. Again, they're relocating that catch basin and proposing a significant addition. So the city engineering department will want to see an updated stormwater management permit. And with that, staff recommends approval of the proposed addition with the following contingency. That contingency being the stormwater management permit must be approved by the city engineering department. And that could be update to the existing stormwater management permit. But nevertheless, it needs to be approved by the city engineering department. So tonight is the Planning Commission public hearing. And then the Planning Commission consideration would be July 11th. We have not received any public comments ahead of this meeting. And with that, I'll entertain any questions.
Questions, commissioners? I think just a confirmation for me. So we've moving the existing landscaping, but no additional landscaping, correct?
That's correct.
And no additional parking and no changes to the parking that were already there, right?
That's correct.
And the only change to the drainage and stormwater is not the retention basin that's already there, but just a catch basin that's located next to the building, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. And we're not there's no additional lighting or anything of that nature as well, correct?
The applicant has not proposed any changes to the lighting, yeah.
All right, any other questions? Thank you. We'll now invite the petitioner to present. Just need step up on the blue mat. We'll just need a name and address to get started.
It's Rob Kennedy, RE Kennedy Construction, representing Dr. Nash. Well, Ryan pretty much went through everything, unless you have questions. I did the original building, and everything's going to match. We're pulling everything off that we, you know, the whole side of that off. The whole thing will have to be wrapped with the same siding, roofing, windows, gable end, looks, colors. It's all staying pretty much as it is. So that's, and again, like you said, we sized the parking up for the additions. They were ghosted on the original plans. Not this exact one, but sort of the square footages. So that's, any questions for me or?
Questions?
Nope. Yep.
I guess I have one. It might be more for Dr. Nash, but same hours of operation and same scope of services.
Yeah, just okay. Additional capacity. Yep.
And I believe Dr. Nash is with you. Does she want to say anything as a part of the petitioner portion?
No, unless there's questions for me.
Any questions for Dr. Nash? All right, thank you.
Okay.
We'll go ahead and open it up for public comments. You know, name and address, please.
My name is Roger Rail, and I represent the Shade West Condo Association. I'm president of the board of directors. First of all, I'd like to comment is we're very thankful that Dr. Nash has developed that area back of there versus what it could have been other than that, so we're thankful on that. But on the other hand, when she developed that, she took away a screening. There was a natural trees and stuff along on that section of the property on Wackerly, and that has disappeared. And so now that exposes the condos along that wall on the opposite side to Dr. Nash, there's no screening there. And that contrasts to the east end of that property on Wackerly between Shade Lane and Shade West Drive. There's the Hance Financial Building. There's a dentist and another building. And there are tall arborvitae trees along that wall that provide some screening. So I'm here to suggest maybe if could happen is some screening trees be placed between the fence, because according to her addition, that will move that building much closer to that wall and a much higher elevation. And so I'm just here to see if that would be considered and be part of the project.
All right, thank you, Roger.
We're not objecting to the addition in any way.
Very good. Thank you, Roger. Public comments or questions? Provide the opportunity for the petitioner to come up if they have final comments.
So I think when we took the site over to build it last time and we had the site plan, which had this the screening that's still developing, it's growing its way up, approved site plan. We cleaned off a lot of downed trees. It had been shaved down to nothing. There was nothing. We had to, in fact, there was an expense of taking it all away. Lots of downed trees, and I don't know that there were any at the wall. We power washed the wall, and then that wall has a basically drainage from the parking lot goes along our swale and takes it out to the pond around the garage. So. We have some shrubs there, but I don't think that we could plant any trees next to the wall. Plus, I don't know that it would be the expense of the project to do that. And in our opinion, we've got the existing screening that will grow its way up. But we didn't take any trees down that were along that fence line at the time. So I don't know if you have any questions.
Any final questions? All right, thank you.
Okay.
All right, so according to our rules of procedure, we will be considering this for deliberation and possible decision at our next meeting. So with that, we will move on from public hearings to the next item on our agenda, which would be old business. I'm seeing none. Moving on to any additional public comments unrelated to items on the agenda.
Jacob knows, I know the procedure. John Elson, 6106 Sturgeon Creek Parkway, Midland, Michigan. I'm going to tell you a few things tonight. I mean, I was at the city council meeting last night presenting. I think I talked to her a good bit on that. I'm not going to really talk that much more other than we've been talking about flooding. It's been a big thing in my things. Road conditions was another thing. And how we're spending our money is the biggest thing I have a big complaint about in the city of Midland. Now, for you guys, if you think back in the Roman days, you know, what makes the Roman Empire such a good thing, or was such a good thing about the Roman Empire. They had infrastructure. They had flowing water. They had sewer systems. You know, that was what they had, and they carried that on until the Dark Ages. Then they forgot all about that again, and you know, people started dumping all their stuff in the streets, and they didn't have fresh water, and of course there's diseases and all that kind of stuff. So that's how important infrastructure is. I mean, if you think about Midland, I mean, I talked to Tom McCann. He lived in the city of Midland. He had an outhouse. So that's how many years ago. He's pretty old, but he ain't that old, you know. So I think my thing about infrastructure is that we've neglected it for a lot of years. What's happened north and west of town with all the building that's been going on there is our infrastructure hasn't been able to keep up. Concept 5, and I'm going to tell, I said this before to them, and I'll say it to y'all. Concept 5 is about the sewer system. And the difference between the sewer system and the stormwater system, they're completely different systems. Concept 5 is only trying to make the sewer system, which is all the manhole covers in the middle of the street, more resilient, okay? Because it's been neglected, and we built so much out in that direction that it's gotten where the sewer system can't handle anymore. So when they talk about it in the budget, when they talk about the storm sewer system, Concept 5 has nothing to do with stormwater. Stormwater is what goes on the gutters, down into the creeks, down into the drains, down sometimes directly into the Tittabawassee River. It doesn't have to be treated. Where sanitary water has to be treated at the wastewater treatment plant. That's the difference between the two. And when they talk about it in the budget, they say stormwater. Even the Midland Alliance for Infrastructure Improvement says the same thing. They say it's the same system, but it isn't. It's part of infrastructure, but they're two different complete systems. And I think everybody here ought to know about that because, I mean, I think it was important that we're doing Concept 5, don't get me wrong, but we haven't done anything as a city to make the stormwater flooding any more resilient than it was 20 years ago, probably 30 years ago. 1986 is when they actually started really making you retain water on the surface. But what I wanted to also say, and I'll say it to you guys tonight, I think what I noticed when I went to the Midland Business Alliance meeting down at Loon Stadium was all about infrastructure, right? And I think what they did was a really good thing. They planned properly. I mean, I could see it all the way through it. They came up, they looked at what the situation was. They looked at the history, and I'm gonna say something about the history in a minute as soon as I find my glasses. Maybe I left them over there. Hold on a second. Well, maybe it didn't. Oh, there they are. Can't see. but they actually did the surveys. They got the topography of the area. So they know about what they're looking at. That's before they ever started thinking about what they're gonna do about it. But also they looked at how often. They looked at the history in the area. And if I can find that piece of paper, it was like 1986 was a major flood event. But then we've had ones in like 1996 and 1998 and 2000 and something and 2000 and something else. Anyways, the frequency of these major flood events in the Tittabawassee River have gotten worse over time. They're worse now than they were before. So I think there's another thing that I didn't mention last night, but I'll mention it to you. You know, data. We need more data. And we have one gauge that we use on the river at the Dow Dam. We don't know what's going down Sturgeon Creek. We have no idea of a history of how much water is going down Sturgeon Creek or Inman Drain or Snake Creek. We have no idea when we have a major flood event. We only know kind of like where it peaked out, but we don't have a history. We don't record it. We don't know what's going on. But if you want to make good plans, you need good data, right? So I think we need to do something like that to make sure that we're following all the things we need to do. But also what I liked about their planning was not only did they look at the history, they actually had a concept where they wanted to go to, And then they developed what I call stage gates. They had to do this by a certain period of time. They had a timeline in which each phase had to be done. As it turns out, there's usually three or four stage gates that you reach. I'd say they've just finished stage gate one. The completion of this project, or when they're going to start it, would be 2030. So that's how many stage gates they have to go through to get to the point where they can actually do anything about it. The ultimate goal was to make basically a levee around the city, you know, basically around the river, I should say. And then they were going to have pump stations to be able to pump the water up because, you know, where's the water going to go from Sturgeon Creek? It's got to go somewhere. It can't be, there's no dam down there to hold it back. So they have to do that. But then again, you're talking about what size pumps are you going to have? How many cubic feet per second are they going to have to be able to pump? You need to know all that data. And you don't know that data unless you have better data to be able to refer to. And then on top of that, what kind of, if you even have submersible pumps or pumps there to pump it out, how big of pumps are they going to have to be? How many cubic feet per second are they going to have to pump? What kind of power are they going to have? If we have a flood event, a major storm, will we have power at all? You know, how would you be able to rectify that? So, I mean, there's a lot of different things that they have to do. And I think they've done something else what's called a risk analysis. And they mentioned it a bunch of times at that meeting was they looked at frequency and severity of different risk scenarios. That's part of planning. Every planning group I've ever been in with every major oil company has a risk assessment chart, a list of all the risks. And then they figure out the severity and the frequency, and then how they mitigate against each one of these risks. Okay, so I think that's an important thing. I wish you all would have went there. I know Jacob went there, and it was a good meeting, I think. And I like the way they plan, and I think we need to plan the same way. However, you know, I can't make the city do anything, but I can complain, and I do that enough. So, but I think it's important for you guys to think about that because you're a committee that looks into all these kind of things. And when you approve projects, you have to take these kind of things into consideration, what you're doing. So I really like there's a lot of people that were there. There's a lot of groups in Midland. You've done your survey, and that was one of the top issues, if I'm not correct, was flooding in Midland. But yet I don't hear anybody in the city saying, I heard him say things, but I haven't seen him take any action. I think Maureen Donker mentioned at the State of the City, they're gonna spend some money to clean out Sturgeon Creek. I haven't seen any of that. They mentioned that at the meeting with the Midland Business Alliance. They mentioned it too. I haven't heard any plans of them doing that, but they mentioned it. But you know, that's been 6 years ago since we had that major flood in 2017. And what have we done? Well, we've got Concept 5. That's, like I said, that's for sanitary. It has nothing to do with flooding, okay? And if this is one of the major considerations for Midland, well, we ought to be thinking about things that we can do to make that happen. I guess in your master plan, which I don't know if it's been finished yet, that's got to be one of the major things that has to be in there since the people of Midland have actually talked about it. So I just want to say that again. I'm not going to be doing this that much more because, you know, I go to the city council meetings enough, and I'm pretty sure they're pretty tired of hearing me talk about it. And I, you know, and that's fine because there's got to be somebody talking about it. And you know, I just won't be talking about it as frequently because I mean, it gets to be like an old record, and you know, and I'm not sure they hear anything sometimes anymore. I know some do, and I get a lot of feedback from other people in the community, and I know they want me to continue doing this, but I don't see them here tonight, you know. They're never there. They like it that I'm doing it, but they're never there to actually, you know, support me that often. Okay, other than, dude, I heard about you. Your name's in the paper again here. Okay, that kind of stuff. So, I just wanted to let you know that's an important part of planning, and there's a way to plan. There's a procedure on how to plan, and I wanted to let you know one other thing that. I was watching either CNBC or Fox News, I don't know which, because I watch both. I watch CNBC for the business, and I watch Fox Business News also. And they're kind of different, but I like CNBC for business news. And it was either one of those two channels that was talking about Florida, okay? Because there's a major boom in real estate in Florida. You should know that, Jacob, right? There's a lot of that. So what's going on is this Run developer, I don't know how many acres he bought, 200 acres or 500 acres or whatever, and it was in an area that's prone to flooding, which is probably like a lot of Florida, and like a lot of Midland County, which is prone to flooding too. And if you look out in Larkin Township, I mean, that's basically a wetland out there. It's mostly a wetland. It has been a wetland since I was a kid. Anyways, so what this developer had to do with the state was to say how resilient they were going to make this development. So it turned out half of the development was made for retention or detention of water. They actually got it approved, but these houses had to be, you know, basically whoever bought that land had to charge double for the acreage because that's what you had to do to develop the property. This is what has to happen in Midland too. I mean, we have to do the same sorts of things. If we're going to be forethinking, thinking in the future, like when they put in the main water line from the Whitefish Point to here, that was a project that thought way into the future. This is what we have to do too. This is what you guys do as a committee. You have to think of the future. We can't just take things that are they go in the present and then just continue on. I mean, I know the state has got its own things like, which I don't understand. I can't think if anybody can convince me that if I want to build on a wetland in Midland County, I can do it if I buy a wetland in Bay County to take its place. Does that make much sense that anybody? I mean, I don't really get it at all, but they said that's I know that's the law, so. So anyway, that's about flooding and infrastructure. And the other thing I want to talk a little bit about is streets. We spend a lot of money on streets. We've taken a lot of money away from streets. And from what I heard, and I don't really know the whole story behind it, but they're talking about Rod and Ashman making that two-lane roads. I think it's ridiculous. There's nothing wrong with the way it is. I heard two businesses want it. Maybe more than two businesses want that to happen. I heard Dan, the mattress man, and your guys over there at Live Oak. But I know at least five that don't want it that's in that area, and probably more. And so for $3.7 million, what it'll cost to do that, I can think of a lot more places in Midland City that needs that $3.7 million. I can look at Swede Road, I can look at Jefferson Road, I can look at Saginaw Road, and even Eastman Road, north of the mall area, that needs the same amount of attention. Roads that get driven on a lot, and they don't have any, you can take the money away from them to do that. You're gonna take that $3.7 million where you could use that to clean out Sturgeon Creek, or you could use it to make retention ponds. I mean, that was what they said at the Midland Business Alliance. There are five environmental groups there, and all five of them came up with a plan, was talked about urban areas where they've actually dug out areas like Cook School, you know, dug it down 4 or 5 feet, where it actually only when inland drain floods does that flood. So basically you're creating a floodplain, which we've taken a lot of floodplain away in Midland. Take the creek as an example down Sturgeon Road. That area was probably 200 loads of sand. They had to build that up to be able to put even condominiums on it. What happened to that floodplain that's there? When Sturgeon River flows, it has no place to go anymore. Now, I know they got a retention pond, but those retention ponds, the rules on those are only to take a certain amount of rainfall from that area, the paved area and the housed area, and put it there and deal with that. Not what happens when Sturgeon Creek overflows. Doesn't have anything to do with that. So to me, it's how we allocate money in the city is important. And I don't think, it's like, I get an example. You build a house, you have a house, and you want to do the remodel the kitchen because it's old and your wife wants it to look a certain way like she saw on HGTV. So you commit to $100,000 or whatever it's going to cost you to do that. But your foundation's falling apart. So what do you do? Well, for me, you know, being a pragmatic engineer kind of guy, I'm saying you fix the basement first. But not everybody's going to think that way. I think that way. You fix the basement first because you know in 15 years that basement's going to maybe fall in and you're still going to have to do the kitchen anyway. You know, so I think we need to be much more pragmatic in our thinking. We can't be so blue sky. I know that downtown development group, I mean, I think they sometimes are. When I had my young daughters, I had to buy them a game called The Sims. I don't know if you even know what it is, okay? It's where they make little utopia things and nothing goes wrong and everybody gets together and kumbaya and they make their little utopian worlds out of a computer, right? Sometimes I wonder if our downtown development board thinks that way. You know, they play The Sims games, think, okay, $14 million, oh, that's nothing. It'll look so much better. Well, it will look a lot better, but $14 million that could have been used for something else more important. You know, you gotta kind of make, there's no compromise in this situation. Not compromising. They say you need this. We don't need this. We don't need Ashman and Rod to be two-lane roads. We don't need that. We need other things a lot more than that. And I think that's the important thing. And as a first group that you guys hear all that, I just want to, you know, encourage you to think that way too, like a lot of other people in Midland. I can tell you right now, I mean, there aren't a lot of people in favor of Ashman and Rod. I know that some people are, and it depends on who you're, probably your group of people are you listen to, but it isn't cut and dry that everybody wants that or sees the greatness in that move, or any more than the street diet. No one really liked that idea either, but you know, they did it. They didn't get everything they wanted. I guess the Indian got cut out, which is, I think, is kind of amusing. But I don't really know what's going to help. Now, I would like that property down there, you know, where the farmer's market was. I would like it to be improved. But I don't know if we need to spend $14 million worth of improvement all at one time. Maybe it can be done in phases or slowly. But to spend that kind of money right off the bat, to forget to go over all these other things that we need. I mentioned at the one of the council meetings was, we have to think in Maslow's terms, hierarchy of needs, what we need and what we want. And I think we need to start thinking about more of what we need in the city than what we want. Thank you, John.
Thank you, John. Any other public comments unrelated to items on the agenda? We'll move to new business. We have two items underneath new business, the first of which is a review of the Midland County Hazard Mitigation Plan.
So we've got Jennifer Boyer here tonight. She's the Emergency Management Coordinator for Midland County. Midland County is working on, and Jen specifically, working on an update to our Emergency Management Plan, or rather our Hazard Mitigation Plan. That Hazard Mitigation Plan is a plan that is currently adopted by both the City of Midland and the County of Midland, as well as other local units of government in the county, to operate as a consolidated hazard mitigation plan for the whole community. So she's here tonight to talk to you a little bit about that update process, get any comments or feedback that the Planning Commission might have on the planning process as that moves forward. No formal actions requested tonight on the part of the Planning Commission, just an opportunity for you all and the public to learn more about the project and to provide your input. So with that, I'll turn the floor over to Jen.
How do I display it up there? The system is different than mine, sorry. I can push a lot of buttons like I do at home. Okay.
So, I can probably make it bigger too.
I'm Jennifer Boyer. I'm the Emergency Management Coordinator for Midland County. I'll probably be touching on a lot of things that John did earlier. It's kind of a little bit of an introduction to some of the things I'm going to be talking about. So you'll be hearing more about our hazards, which include flooding and some other things here too. Thanks. So the hazard mitigation plan is done by the County Emergency Management Office because it encompasses all the jurisdictions within the county. It is a plan that is has to be approved by FEMA as well as all the jurisdictions, but it also provides a lot of benefits as well, especially to the City of Midland. The plan has to be updated every 5 years. The plan, our current plan that was adopted in 2019 will expire in January of 2023. So between now and January, my intention is to review and update the plan and get approval both from the state and from FEMA, and then the local jurisdictions approve it once we're through that process. So as emergency management office, our emergency management program is comprehensive. So most of the time we spend in planning and talking about response to emergencies, planning for emergencies. Prior to the dam failure, we did a lot of planning for evacuations for the dam failure and those types of things. Preparedness initiatives, making people more prepared and trying to make them resilient to different hazards and emergencies so that there's not so much of a lean on government to help them, whether it's sheltering, power, you know, those types of things, warming shelters or cooling shelters, whatever the case may be, depending on the hazard. We also have recovery. Recovery is the longest period and usually the most challenging period. We're still recovering from the dam failure 3 years ago. I participated in the long-term recovery group for 2 years. That was done with United Way and some other partners. That kind of wrapped up, and then now we're starting to do recovery things with grant money that has come to us from federal appropriations and stuff as another recovery piece from the dam failures in 2020. So any day I'm working on one of these or sometimes multiple of these pieces continuously to keep it all going together because it all links to something else. And today we're focusing on that mitigation piece. So basically hazard mitigation is any action that's taken before, during, or after disaster to try to eliminate that impact or even reduce that impact to either human life or property from different types of disasters, whether natural or human-made. Whoops. So why do we do this? And why I'm here today in front of this group is because the planning that you do here can set you up for success 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road to help build that resiliency in the community. It takes ordinances, it takes those things. You guys kind of develop some of the rules in your community for buildings and those types of things and what that's gonna look like. And mitigation needs to be kind of integrated well in with that in order for it to be successful. And also the plan allows you to be eligible for federal funding, whether it's pre-disaster funding or post-disaster funding. And whenever we have a federally declared disaster here, we get post-disaster funding, and many times that funding is only for those communities that were impacted by the disaster. So we get priority over applying for that funds, and then it can be opened up farther across the state for that, but it does provide us some opportunities. Also, this plan helps with your national flood insurance participation and your community rating system, where you participate to a certain level in which you save residents who have flood insurance percentage on their flood insurance policy. So this is one of those requirements that you have, the city has to have to meet some of those requirements. So basically the process is the planning process, identifying our hazards, which we've done multiple times, and then doing a risk analysis of those hazards, and then identifying the goals and strategy in which we can do to mitigate some of those or reduce those risks. And then there's ongoing planned maintenance, because as things happen over that five-year period, either we have more emergencies or disasters, or we start working on some of those mitigation activities and we start making some improvements or becoming more resilient and reducing those hazards. Those things are the things that we kind of update. And then we adopt the plan again. This year is a little bit different. Since the last time we did this, there now is a high hazard dam section. And we have 2 or 4 of the 9 high hazard dams in the state of Michigan that's eligible for this specific type of funding. So in order for them to be eligible for this funding, they need to be part of our hazard mitigation plan. So since 2018, when we updated the plan, we're having a lot more information added. We have a whole separate section in addition to our 2 or 3 page that we had on dam failure that we now have to have because there's a large amount of number of requirements that need to be met to meet that high hazard dam requirement under FEMA's guidance. So these are some of the projects that have been done locally, specifically with just this funding. Because the Midland County has had this plan, I believe we've had this plan since 2008 was the first time we've done the plan. So we've had the plan for probably about 15 years or so now. So here are some of the fundings and projects that have come out of this plan being completed and being approved by FEMA and being kept up to date by office. So as you can see, a lot of those projects, the city itself has been has benefited from this plan and participating in that plan. Most recently, Four Lakes Task Force has received funding to help with stabilizing the dams and working through that process with that new high hazard dam opportunity. And the Village of Sanford too has done a lot since the 2017 flooding event as well. So the timeline for this period, in the last few months, we've done a lot of mining for information and data. We now have to have climate change as a requirement, which was not a requirement before. Obviously, in the last 5 or 6 years, we've had more information on climate change, so that's helped as well. We also have to add social vulnerability information. So even though we do have identified the hazards, we also now have to identify the parts of the community that might be socially vulnerable to those hazards. So those hazards are going to have a higher level of impact to them than other residents. And then also that high hazard dam annex I talked about. We're in the month of June, so I've been rolling this out to local jurisdictions, and we're going to have representation from each of the jurisdictions in the planning process. That's kind of a new requirement from FEMA. If your jurisdiction has to regularly participate in the planning process in order for FEMA to approve your adoption of a plan. So there's been 5 meetings scheduled on a monthly basis over the next 5 months in which we will go through as a large group and update the plan. And then also we'll be doing a public outreach campaign too, because public input is equally as important in this as jurisdictional input. And then these are the timeline going forward, the meetings and stuff that we'll have, and then goals or deadlines that we've kind of set for having the plan approved, final draft, approval from the state and from FEMA, and then working to have the local jurisdictions adopt the plan. So specifically here at the city, we have a community profile built in there for you, but again, that participation of the regular scheduled meetings, I've sent the information to the city manager as well as those other people within the city. In the past, we've had a committee that had subject matter experts on it that included the planning director and the fire chief and some other officials in the city, because they have that perspective about that hazard. And it's their area, whether it's fires, hazardous material events, chemical releases, wildfire, all those types of things are included in this plan. So having those folks attend those meetings and provide that input and that subject matter expertise is important. And then as we're going to go forward, we'll share the information with residents, get feedback. We have a lot of different things planned for, like doing polls, doing educational pieces on the various hazards, and trying to get that interaction with the residents on the planning piece. And then we'll go through the final adoption of the plan, and hopefully we'll start going through some of those mitigation activities. We have started some of them, but there's a lot of areas in which we've been reporting for several years that we haven't made any progress in them, and we really need to try to prioritize making progress in those areas. So these are the hazards that have been identified across Midland County. Those that have the red asterisk next to them are hazards that we've actually experienced in the last 5 years. Winter storms, that's something that we have a lot during the winter, but there's a certain level of winter storms in which we address in the plan. usually those that close government agencies and those higher type events. Unfortunately, we had the dam failure that resulted in the river flooding. And then we had a public health emergency with a pandemic. And then we did have a small pipeline accident, but we have a large number of pipelines throughout our community. And it only takes sometimes not following the right safety protocols or just the stars to align for us to have an incident where we're going to have an impact to the community. So currently there's five large goals in the existing plan, which talk about basically providing information to the community, improving our capabilities to warn people as well. A lot of it's sharing information. We haven't had a lot of shovel-like revenue projects or mitigation projects proposed, so that's something that we're really working on. FEMA has really been pushing to have more like those shovel-ready projects, so a lot of the work that's being done by the MBA Critical Infrastructure Committee, that information is going to go in this plan to talk about what we're doing, what we're planning on doing, the flood study with Army Corps of Engineers, and then we'll also have USGS, that flood inundation map program should be done next 18 months or so. So we can talk about those, and then when we update the plan, hopefully we'll have some of those things completed 5 years from now. And there's a potential for new goals. I honestly don't know of any new goals myself. I think our current goals really cover most of our areas. And again, I think it would be beneficial for us to spend our time and resources in the current goals that we've established than creating more goals to add to the to-do list that may not be as impactful. This is what the Hazard Mitigation Committee used to be. We're still using these positions and these in the committee. We're just adding representative from each of the local jurisdictions, and then also Four Lakes Task Force has to have a representative because of their dam failure annex and part of their requirements to fulfill that. So as you can see, we have a lot of different representation that for all across the community. So our next steps are going to be our regular scheduled meetings where we'll basically go over each of the hazards, provide the updated information we have on it. It's kind of like an educational piece. We're going to evaluate the hazards on how they impact us and assess our vulnerability to them. And then we're going to review those mitigation goals and their strategies that are with them, find out what we've done, what we need to still do. Is there anything that we need to tweak or whatever? We have a lot of alternative goals and alternative strategies that I think are a lot of repetitiveness that we might just kind of scrap out of there. It basically says we'll do this, but if we don't do that, then we'll do this, then we'll do this to the point that we will do nothing. And I don't know how much value that brings. So we'll be looking at really deciding whether or not those bring value and if there's any reason to keep them in the plan. And again, that public involvement piece that I had talked about. The current plan is publicly available on the Midland County Emergency Management website for you to look through. Are there any questions from this group?
Well, we do have three major chemical companies, in town, and it seems like they'd be a key stakeholder or somebody who should have input into this specifically. Is there a reason? It looked like all the entities were government entities as opposed to...
So this is a public plan and we'll have some public input. Mm-hmm. As far as specific to hazardous materials, we'll have the fire chief and that kind of stuff, but we also will have, we have what's called a local emergency planning committee, which deals with all those plans for all those facilities okay. that have hazardous material sites, and we've invited the chairperson and vice chairperson from that to have, so they'll have that piece as far as the number of sites, and that's an area in which we're expanding a lot of our information in that hazardous material area because we went from 2018 having two facilities to now having multiple facilities, and that even though we still have the same same area. It does change things a little bit, so we'll be adding a lot more data to that. And then also we're going to be adding some big picture potential impacts of that as well to that. So we are adding a lot to that. And we'll be probably, I'll probably be presenting to Dow as well. Dow sits on the LAPC as well as Trinzio and Cabot and the other companies. So this will be presented to that group as well. So they'll have input as well.
I think they were listed as, so climate change and social vulnerability in addition to, I think, the high hazard dams. Those are, I think you said new risks, right?
New requirements for us to talk to address.
So when you say social vulnerability and climate change, what specifically are we talking about?
So social vulnerability for an example, severe wind or tornadoes. Those structures are probably the least safe in tornadoes are maybe mobile homes. And usually those that are in mobile homes have live on maybe more limited incomes, those types of things. Okay. And they're most likely more vulnerable to a tornado because they don't have a dwelling in which has a structure that meets certain building codes that would provide them protection. And also they're probably because of economic issues and social issues, they are less likely to be prepared for a tornado. And you can add that to other types of things. If they lose power, those types of things. Vulnerabilities, those that depend on power for medical type of needs or situations. If we were to have a storm where we lost power for a week or so at a time, those are some vulnerable populations that we're going to kind of highlight in aggregated data.
And then you said no new goals. So is there a connection between the two? And I guess ultimately, like, where or when would the data from a request, you know, get to a point where you'd actually change a goal or you'd add a new goal or? I'm just curious.
I mean, there can be discussion about new goals. Last time we didn't add a new goal, we added a new strategy to one of the goals. So on one of the goals that talks about, actually I have this here, let me pull it out. On one of them, it talks with dealing with flooding and different things. There was a strategy on there to talk about looking at local ordinances within jurisdictions that would address the floodplain. So like the city has an ordinance as how far you can build a fence from a house, but there's not an ordinance of how far you can build a house from the floodplain. Because a lot of that just goes through Eagle permitting. I don't know if that's, I'm not a planning specialist or a zoning specialist, but those are some areas where maybe local jurisdictions could look at their ordinance and stuff. And by starting to put some of those things in place, then you move people away from that risk further.
Okay.
And one of those was in community master plans, creating maybe a flood zone. Like the city has a lot of property that they have used to purchase, to remove homes from, and have used hazard mitigation money to acquisition, and then it's still zoned for single family housing, but you can't have single family housing. So creating a zone that basically identifies that this is a floodplain and we can't have buildings here would be helpful.
Okay. So it's more of a, even if the risks change or if there's additional requests, we just might, to your point, we might need to just have new strategies to make sure we're accomplishing those goals even in the midst of those new emerging
threats,
could
add more strategies to the goals. I mean, it's not a complete no on new goals. It really depends on what comes out of the committees. This time around, we're adding a lot of data and information. So when you re-educate people on hazards and provide updated data, then their perspective changes about it, right? Their understanding changes. So sometimes then when we rank it on vulnerability with a better understanding of different impacts with the social vulnerability and the climate change, then those things may change in our rankings of hazards. Like with climate change under the flooding, I think it was like 50 years ago, our average rainfall was like 240 centimeters a year. And now I think last year it was 1200. Like it has, that's how much it's changed. So if our climate is changing and producing all this precipitation, then our current flooding issues are not going to get right. smaller. So then talking through that data and having that big picture and understanding might develop some additional strategies that could be added to the plan.
And one of those, it sounds like, is at least wanting to be having some of our dams classified as high hazard, which they weren't before, correct?
That's a federal classification for the federal money. Our dams have always been classified as high hazard because of the loss of life impact below the dams in the event of a failure.
So what's the change for this year?
The change for this year is that there is a specific type of high hazard requirement that FEMA has regarding dams, and they have special requirements for a mitigation plan specifically for a dam. So instead of Four Lakes Task Force doing their own hazard mitigation plan for all hazards beyond a dam failure, they're just being part of ours with just that dam failure piece. Does that make sense?
I think so. So, I mean, I'm picking up that it's something that has to be requested. It's not something that's just applied without being requested in the first place, right? Like, the federal government doesn't apply it. You have to request for this to be, designation to be made, correct?
They have to request for the funding.
Okay. And we didn't do this. So the last update to the plan was in 2019, which was before the dam failure, correct? And
right.
we hadn't, up until that, we hadn't applied for that new funding, correct?
So FEMA rolled out that funding, rolled out that new hazard mitigation plans for high hazard dams like middle of 2018.
Okay.
And it actually wasn't communicated to us until well after
okay.
the plan was finalized. So,
okay.
And at that time it was privately owned and a lot of other things.
Okay.
I'm curious,
yeah, go ahead.
Earlier this year with the train derailments of the hazardous material, is that, and having trains going in and out with hazardous material here, is that under the hazardous material section of that?
Yeah, so we have hazardous material as a fixed site for like facilities. We also have transportation of hazardous materials, which would be like railroad or even like your semi-trucks that are going down the road. We have it there as well. Pipelines are also considered transportation of hazardous materials. So we cover in those two different areas.
Other question? I think the only one I have is just generally, I mean, what, you're the expert on this. I mean, what questions are we not even asking at this point that maybe we should?
Like, gave you a really high level of this
right.
without going through each of the hazards. So I'd recommend you maybe take the time to kind of look at it. Or even Jacob or some others from the city will be part of the plan. I mean, the plan's there, and we've put a lot of drafted information there, and we're gonna get that drafted document out. But we'll have some surveys and stuff, but just read over. And if you have any questions, you can email us, or we're gonna have like a way in there for public comment and stuff, just very similar to how you guys have developed your master plan here. But that's really, it's just getting people's attention and getting their interest so they actually look at it. Like, we've had this plan since 2008. We've had a dam failure annex in there, and we still, for some reason, didn't have a lot of people that understood the impacts of a dam failure.
Okay.
Unfortunately, in 2020.
Right.
So.
I mean, beyond that, is there anything specific that you need from us as a planning commission, or maybe even need from city council on this that we can help with?
Just the involvement of city staff in the planning process. And then I usually work really well with your communications folks. So if I need to get anything out through social media and stuff, they're really helpful in doing those types of things. So, you know, it's not the most exciting thing to read, but it has a lot of great information about it, about our community and how we should really prepare for things. And having the vision and optics of planning for your community, understanding this, I think would be very valuable for your role, to be honest.
Okay. Any final questions? All right. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
Next item underneath new business is a proposed, I think, look at this, right, zoning text amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So tonight, this is just introduction of a potential staff-initiated text amendment. So again, keeping with the theme tonight, no formal action is requested of the Planning Commission. You're getting off really easy, as am I. No roll call votes, so no complaints from me. But just wanted to introduce this to you, and if there's concurrence from the Planning Commission, we will schedule a public hearing and bring this forward at your second meeting in July. The proposal is to amend the community zoning district to add schools as a permitted use. And so some of you will recall, probably most of you, that around this time last year, the Planning Commission entertained and actually recommended an amendment to this same section to add childcare centers as a permitted use within the community zoning district. And so subsequently, we've been working with the applicant that was involved in that text amendment that was ultimately approved by City Council, and looking at this district more holistically with a little bit less of a time crunch and feeling like there may be a warrant here to continue with another amendment. The community district is intended for special public, quasi-public, and private uses that are deemed to have special community significance. And so from staff's perspective, schools certainly would fit within that intent. So just as a background, schools are a defined term in the zoning ordinance under Article 2, which states that they're a building used for the purpose of elementary, secondary, or university education, which meets all the requirements of the compulsory education laws of the state of Michigan. The community district currently permits, like every district, a variety of uses. Among those are colleges and universities, vocational and tech schools, child care centers, community centers, and libraries. Those are all uses that have similar operating characteristics to schools. The community zoning district is comprised of almost 2,600 acres within the city of Midland, so a huge geographic area, and a relatively small number of parcels, just 146. Some of those notable properties within the city that have community zoning include City Forest, the airport, Midland Soccer Club, the medical center, Northwood, Dell Gardens, and Whiting Forest. Community zoning district also includes one existing school, which is Central Park Elementary. We looked at both Midland Public Schools as well as the private schools within the community. The majority of Midland Public Schools, unsurprisingly, given that many of them are located within the middle of residential areas, are located in residential districts, RA 1, 2, 3. We have a handful of exceptions. Our two high schools are in the residential B zoning district. We also have a school, a parochial school downtown that's located in the downtown zoning district. As I mentioned, we've continued to work with the new owner of the former Delta College building and looking how she can make best utilization of that property and some potential collaborations and partnerships within the building that would make sense with a childcare facility. Such as the one she's opening, and that has included discussion of potentially a private school partner, which is not currently permitted. This is that community zoning district, just from a geographic perspective. Those properties shaded in green are zoned community, and so you'll pick out the large ones, Northwood, the hospital, City Forest, and the airport, being the most notable of those around town that would be impacted. The city's water and wastewater, or I should say water reclamation facilities, are also in that community zoning district on Bay City Road. So you're familiar with the review criteria, and we'll go over these slides in more detail should you wish to move forward with this case. But suffice to say, staff believes there's an argument to be made here for this amendment, and so we'd like to bring it forward for public hearing for the following reasons. Schools are compatible with what's currently permitted at the community district. Generally, also, there's a correlation between the institutional and civic future land use category on the current future land use map, And the description of that is described as including schools as an intended land use. So there's a master plan justification here. We do have that one existing public school already located within the community district, and it doesn't appear that there'll be any detrimental impacts to uses that are currently permitted in the community district if schools were to be added to that list. So again, no formal action requested this evening other than your concurrence that staff can bring this forward to you at your July 25th meeting. I'd welcome any questions, Mr. Chair.
Questions? Nothing more than a comment of when I saw it listed along the other ones, I was surprised that it wasn't there in the first place. So something yeah. We probably should have caught a lot sooner, but I'm glad we did it now.
Yeah, I was just wondering, was there a reason why it wasn't included, that maybe history that we should be aware of, but other than that, it just seems to make sense. Yes. I mean.
Well, and the fact that we have a school that's in a community zone district already.
Yeah. I mean, this wouldn't be like a mechanism to slip schools into parks by right or anything, so.
And so as a matter of fact, many of our parks are zoned residentially as well, because that's a permitted use within the residential districts. And we have a lot of schools that are near parks. And so, and our parks are protected by ordinance. And so by city ordinance, not zoning ordinance per se. Specifically rather. So no, I wouldn't expect that. My hunch is that it's simply the fact that there are so few public schools located within the community district, the vast majority being residential, that it just probably was simply overlooked when the district was originally prepared.
Okay, thank you.
And you just need a concurrence from us to move forward for a public hearing.
Yeah, a lack of opposition would be sufficient for us to bring it forward. So if there's not significant, a groundswell of opposition, we'll schedule it, and then you'll have the opportunity to make a recommendation at that time.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we'll continue through the remainder of our agenda to our next item, which would be communications. Not seeing any. Report of the chairperson. Would like to mention that we had a special meeting before this meeting. We looked at the future land use maps as well as transportation maps. So I'm really encouraged by the comments that we received and the discussion we continue to have. So, and more than anything, just a thank you to city staff for the work that has gone into it since November of this year, and knowing there's a lot of work ahead for the rest of the summer to put the final plan together. So thank you to you guys, and looking forward to seeing the final product in a couple months.
It's been nothing really easy, so we're enjoying it. We'll be happy to see it to the finish line.
And that is all for me.
Great. Well, I've got a whole huge list, so let me start with the boring stuff first. So you hopefully received your regular update from Michigan Association of Planning. Their annual conference registration is open, and we do have funds, as always, for training. So if anyone's interested, this is a lot of advance notice that conference, which is October 4th through the 6th, that's going to be at the Grand Traverse Resort this year. So if you're interested in attending, let us know, and we can look at that. We'll extend the offer to the other members as well. We next agenda will have elections for officers. So per your new bylaws, we'll be looking for nominations that day and then taking a vote. So if anybody is interested in the office of chair or vice chair and has questions about it, you can certainly, I'm sure, ask our current chair or vice chair, or ask Ryan or I. We'd be happy to give you some info on that. Commissioner Decro and Commissioner Kohlinger are eligible to continue in service. Hint, hint, if you wish, for the bylaws. But ultimately, you'll get to make that choice at your next meeting. We also will have a tentative preliminary plat, resubmittal for Westside Subdivision, a final decision on Nash Dermatology, which you heard tonight, and we'll be bringing forward another staff-recommended zoning text amendment related to mechanical equipment, specifically in-home generators, that we'll just be introducing for concurrence purposes. Also, next meeting, you'll have two new members joining the Planning Commission. So those appointments were ratified last evening by City Council. And so we're looking forward to having Commissioners Griffiths and Commissioner Thomas join us. Commissioner Griffiths was a member of the Zoning Board of Appeals, and so he'll be coming over to us from that board. We all also have a third vacancy due to the resignation of Commissioner Mayville, and so my understanding is that City Council is likely to make a appointment for that, the remainder of Commissioner Mayville's term, at their first meeting in July, on July 10th. And so we may have a very, very new member, depending on their schedule, if they're able to join us the next evening on July 11th. And with that, I want to close by, I'll start by recognizing the person who's not here, which is Commissioner Mayville, who tendered his resignation since the last meeting. Mr. Mayville served 8 years on the Planning Commission, and I believe at least 2 terms as the chairperson of the Planning Commission. He was the most recent chairperson before Chair Kohlinger, and I don't know if anybody has anything they well wishes they want to send to Commissioner Mayville. I certainly do, although we only worked together for a year. He was always quick with a joke to lighten the mood, and very insightful in his way of looking at things, so he'll be missed.
Yeah, I'll second that. I mean, I always appreciated his attention to detail in particular. So he usually had questions that I didn't think to ask, but were very important at the time. So particularly when it came to the master planning process as well, just being able to look forward and have those ideas beyond that was always impressive to me as well. So only wish he could have continued on until he could see the master plan be adopted and take that vote at the end of next year, but wishing him well.
Yeah, so as we wish him goodbye, we'll also, now that we've made you maximize the amount of time you had to stew in anticipation, this is also Commissioner Bain's last meeting. We've noted that a few times tonight. And Commissioner Bain and Commissioner Mayville were actually appointed on the same date 8 years ago.
I didn't know that.
June 22nd. Yeah. But you saw him through. You outlasted him by meeting, so you'll always be able to hold that over him. That was June 22nd of 2015, and I will. I'll start by just expressing my appreciation. You keep me on my toes, Commissioner Bain, and I will miss that. I think you make me a better planning director because I have to be prepared. Because for every question you ask that I expect, you ask 2 that I don't, and which is really good and helps to create a really good and thoughtful discussion here. So that's going to be also very big shoes for our new commissioners to fill.
Actually, I would turn it over to James. Any final comments for us as you're leaving?
Well, I really enjoyed the opportunity. You know, I've learned a lot about the city, learned a lot of about the people in the city, and a lot of positive experiences with that. I'm real glad I did the 8 years. And one thing that becomes more and more evident to me as I was participating is that a big role that we have as planning commissioners is not so much the technical expertise that staff has, but it's goes back to why I always ask a lot of the questions, is we have a big communication role and a big open government role. And that became more and more apparent to me as things went on. So again, I'm real grateful for the opportunity, and I wish the new commissioners well.
Well, thank you again. You will be missed. So.
That's my report.
All right.
Unless anyone else is resigning tonight. I won't have as nice of things to say about Chief D. It's for the record.
Well, James, would you like to do a final
motion?
Yeah,
I'll move. We adjourn.
I'll second.
I have a motion from Commissioner Bain and a second from Commissioner Broderick to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
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 And those opposed, same sign. We are adjourned.
Channel 1. Channel 2. 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 Channel 1, 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 Channel 2.